And good afternoon. Welcome into Market Talk for Thursday, February 18, 2021. And a good afternoon to you once again. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to be here. MarketTalkAg.com, our home on the web, MarketTalkAg.com. You can find our social media links there as well, and also all our great radio affiliates from the Dakotas down to Texas and everywhere in between. You can find all that information online at MarketTalkAg.com, as well as your favorite streaming sources for podcasts, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and many more. Well, great day to stay inside with the cold weather still continuing and snow in some parts of the country, and including parts of the South that don't see it. I know our thoughts are with folks who are in Texas and Oklahoma dealing with the snow and ice right now. But we got a lot to talk about in the markets today. USDA Ag Outlook Forum started today, and some numbers there to chew on a little bit. Let's bring in our good friend Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics joining us today. Mike, good afternoon, and hopefully you're staying warm there in Kansas, my friend.
We see the sunshine today, Jesse, and that's a start.
That is definitely a start. That is a start. And, you know, we're getting a start on this Ag Outlook Forum here today, and I just want to get your thoughts on some of these numbers here. Initially, it seems like everything was fairly as advertised, although you and I were chatting a little bit. That soybean number maybe came in a little higher than expected.
Yeah, a couple things on the soybeans in particular. And what we've seen so far is just the chief economist's, essentially his speech and also his presentation. The real big supply-demand numbers that will be giving the market a lot of, I think, trend forecasting ability between now and the end of March and the next acreage report by USDA. Those come Friday morning with the actual individual outlooks for the different grains, oil seeds, and livestock. So we're about halfway into a very important 2 days for supply-demand fundamentals. And these kind of go together and are bridges, especially in light of what's going on with COVID and our supply chains, and also what's going on with South America. And I'll delve into that here in a second. But essentially, you're right. Coming in at 90 million acres for soybeans, that's about 7 million more than last year. So that is a big jump. We were going to rotate towards soybeans anyway because of the low acres last year. And I think we did pick up some extra acres as a result of the prices. But corn came in at 92 million. That was about 2 million, million and a half to 2 million more than I thought it would be at this stage of the game, given the corn bean spread and given the, where the crop insurance base price is, you know, likely to flush out here as we get into the true halfway mark of setting that base price. Mm-hmm. But at 90 million bean acres, and using all of USDA's demand numbers from this current year and using their ending stocks number of 120 million bushels from this past month's report, using a 51.5 bushel national yield, which isn't hard to achieve, but it has been the last couple, 3 years. But if we would achieve that, we're still not going to add anything to the carryover. In fact, we'll probably stick right around that 125 to 135 million bushel carryover for the end of next year under that kind of a demand and under that kind of a yield analysis using those big acreage jump. So the market sees that as tight, and it makes sense why the front-end spreads, the front-end markets are weaker, and the new crop November is a little bit firmer. One of the things that I think, and I'm jumping back towards what's going on with South America right now, Jesse, is one of the things that I picked up after the USDA chief economist got done talking, and after I read his speech and went through all of his slides, a newswire story broke on one of the major newswires. It said USDA says we may import soybeans because of tight supplies, but wouldn't need a lot because of big acreage or something to that effect. Well, I didn't hear any of that from the ag chief economist at all. So I got in touch with a newswire person who I know, who's a really good fellow. I've known him for many, many years. And I said, where's that ad in a speech? Give me a page number. And he said that was actually at a press briefing with the chief economist. And so then he later sent me kind of the full contextual side of the comments that the chief economist made. But it leaves open the idea that we are probably down around 100 million bushel carryover for soybeans, if not a little bit less. And we should not be surprised to see anything come in the next couple months into like Wilmington bulk, which is typically where the soybeans or the soy meal exports from South America head into the United States. So I think we're right in keeping the soy meal as our leader right now for the soy complex as we go through South American harvest, which is still very, very slow, and also get planted into that second crop, Brazilian corn crop, which is, I think it was around 8% planted this week earlier versus a five-year average of 33%.
You know, we talk a lot about South American weather as well on top of all of this, and you hit on a lot of those key points and really look in Brazil, Argentina, there's either spots that are too wet or there's spots that are too dry right now. And that's kind of the big storyline we've been focusing on. And I think as well on the soybean side with this outlook for them, you know, it seems like the market, you mentioned it, some of those old crop numbers taking a little bit of a hit on Thursday with the new crop staying somewhat firm. But really, markets seem to kind of digest that planted acre projection, and it's kind of moved on from it. We didn't really fall too hard in soybeans on the day today.
No, and I think that's where tomorrow, Friday, comes into play big time, because we'll get some fresh demand numbers. As I said, I use the 2020 demand forecast from USDA, which is 4.575 billion on total demand in the soybean complex. Will we stay that high or maybe even go higher? And that's where I would be surprised if USDA would put us at a higher number given the price levels we're looking at right now versus where we started out at the first of this year. So that's probably the biggest thing I'll be watching on Friday. And as I said, I've talked to clients and subscribers a lot about the soy meal. We've got a current February low that we put in earlier this week, which got us very, very close to the January low, which at January low is all the way, it's about $5 lower, about $4.1760 is the January low. So if a client called me today and hadn't talked to me for a couple months and said, where are you going to start selling beans at? Or if you're forced into it, where are you going to let go the last 10% of 2020 beans? Or how are you going to go up above 50, 55% on your current bean sales right now for 21 crop? If I went below that 4.1760 level in the lead month meal at the end of this week, I would really have to do something, because that would be a breakdown technically with some of these fundamentals probably starting to take hold. One thing I'll cap off this discussion with this part is the idea that the Paranagua port price, we talked about this last week, that price is running substantially below the U.S. Gulf of Mexico price. Last time I checked, I believe it was around $25 or $30 a ton cheaper than where we're at in beans at the Gulf of Mexico. And that has come down this week some. So in terms of the South American Brazilian price in particular. So as they get harvested, it does look like the Brazilian port price is starting to go down, which we really have to respect that this time of year.
Let's talk corn a little bit here before we move on to wheat. I'm curious about some things in wheat as well, Mike. But on the corn side, you know, looking at the Ag Outlook Forum numbers we got for Thursday, anything there that surprised you? And also, I know ethanol production fell a little bit more than expected here this week, and I'm wondering how much that's factoring into our corn market right now.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of that's factored into the corn market right now. And that's something that you and I have talked about for several months now, is that, you know, we've got this export market that's pretty much on fire at this stage of the game. And the chief economist noted how the corn export demand has really picked up in China. It's not about DDGs. It's not about Milo. It's about corn now. And I think this is important from a standpoint of what's the best thing to store. Well, it used to be very easily for me to say at the prices we were at 3 months ago, best thing to store is corn because it's got the best demand outlook and it's got too cheap a price to it. Now that we've gotten the higher prices, we know the export market's running and we see what's going on with the ethanol industry. I think it's really important to watch geographically where you're at as far as what you store corn over beans. And what I'm getting at is ethanol plants this week, because of the energy issues in Texas, literally shutting down, selling natural gas that they had bought at lower levels. And I think this is where those energy numbers, those ethanol numbers this week really came out and supplied essentially documented proof that that's exactly what's going on, is that we are seeing higher unleaded gas prices, which does make ethanol cheaper, but it also keeps that consumption level lower and it gets you harder to get up to that blend wall. In other words, consumers are not going to tolerate $3 a gallon gasoline prices in the middle of winter because of a Texas power outage and all these, you know, strange things that are coming in that are affecting our energy markets. The same with diesel. You're just not going to have the type of transportation demand that you normally have at the prices we had 6 or 8 months ago. So corn ethanol demand is not looking better. USDA in their ag outlook that they put out earlier this week, which didn't change a lot, but they did have a few new comments, said that they do not see gasoline consumption getting back to pre-COVID levels all the way out to 2029, 2030, because the cars that we're going to be using at that point are not going to be as inefficient with gasoline consumption, and they're expecting to be a lot more electric vehicles. So we really do have to start planning our farm now when it comes to the corn and the ethanol demand, and that's another key point about Friday. So for me, this week on corn was about really wheat holding us up and the fundamentals not doing so great. I'm hoping we close the week out with another strong weekly export sales week, though, Jesse, and that keeps the corn in this trading range we've kind of defined here.
And it'll be interesting to see if we do get some good weekly export numbers here on Friday. You know, with China out for most of the week with the Lunar New Year holiday, that will surely have an impact on some of those export numbers. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about wheat here today, Mike. And, you know, in the Ag Outlook Forum, wheat area expected to rise slightly off the lowest area on record last year. And I know this cold weather in the hard red country is going to impact. We're going to see some damage to wheat. I know European stocks tightening as well. And, you know, we've really seen wheat rebound on Thursday. It was up Tuesday. We gave it all back Wednesday. And then we start to grab, you know, a lot of it back on Thursday. What do you make of this wheat market right now?
I'm hoping we have cleaned out the weather play. In other words, the short-term weather bull and bear and profit taker, because now we have two reports, in my opinion, Jesse, the WASDE report globally and now the USDA baseline acreage number of 45 million acres and an average price of $5.50 this coming year with harvest not far away at this point for winter wheat. I think it's really about the wheat now as far as needing to come in and support this trade. The wheat corn spread's gotten low enough. That should be attractive to the fund traders of buying wheat and selling corn, which in turn supports the corn because it keeps the wheat from being a feed grain. And we got dangerously close to that, as we talked about, I think last week or the week before, when we got down to 85 or 90 cents premium soft red wheat minus corn. For me, I've been out here almost 8 years. It'll be 8 years this spring in northeastern Kansas. I'm not in the hard red wheat belt, but I'm only an hour and a half away from it, as opposed to when I lived in north central Indiana for the prior 17 years that I've been in the commodity markets. My point is, since I've lived out here, I have not seen pictures or heard as much about permanent damage done to the hard red wheat crop in this state as this year and this winter. And so I think that also kind of puts the wheat in a fundamental pull position, if you will, from a weather standpoint, of finding the most upside potential coming out of dormancy, and that we will probably lose more winter wheat acres. That 33 million acres that I think USDA gave us, that number I think is going to go down, and it may go down by a couple million acres because of the hard red wheat crop here in Kansas, probably being turned over and put into either milo or soybeans. So I think the wheat has a lot to offer in terms of the upside in this market. And I think the SovEcon numbers on Thursday did a lot of good in taking some pressure off of U.S. wheat prices, because SovEcon took their estimates down from about just under 78 million tons down to about 76.2. That doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a lower trajectory, and it's a lot lower than USDA's current forecast. So I see a lot of reasons why wheat would want to be a supportive feature in this grain market once again. The only thing that I have to worry about and continue to watch is the possibility that we've put a dollar low in and a stock market high in, because the bond yields are hitting levels. The 10-year bond yields in particular are hitting levels of about 1.3%. That's pretty good safe money if you're an investor. So I could see why you would move money out of equities, maybe even out of commodities at some point, and move it back into bonds to get that kind of an interest rate or that yield on a 10-year piece of paper. And if that happens, that ends up helping the dollar, because it takes U.S. dollars to buy U.S. bonds. So I think that's kind of where I'm at on the wheat market. I think the downside's limited. I think I'm more of a mindset, unless something really changes on USDA's Friday numbers, that I'll be more of a buy the dip type mindset in wheat until we break dormancy.
I think overall with Friday, with any grains, producers looking at some of these numbers that come out and how much they affect the market, I think it just comes back to staying disciplined and watching where your break-evens are at. And if we do happen to get some number in here that adversely affects these markets, being ready to make some of those sales if you hit that number, kind of that floor that you've set, hopefully.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think to sum that up is the month of February for me has always been about, unless I see otherwise, in other words, South American weather or USDA baseline numbers or Federal Reserve updates, unless I see otherwise, I've been planning for February to give us a nice push to the upside, mm-hmm. but to take advantage of that push, especially in the corn and beans. And if I get a really good push, strong push in wheat, I'll take a look at that as well. But we're not, you know, the wheat just hasn't been as strong recently as the corn and beans have.
Let's move over to livestock here today, Mike. And I tell you what, this cash cattle market, painfully quiet. Just not a lot of interest with the weather issues and the conditions we're seeing throughout Texas and Oklahoma. Things are just really, really quiet there today. And the futures trade is lower as well. What are you seeing in cattle? Is there any chance we're going to get some activity in here either later this afternoon or into Friday with just the weather conditions right now?
I don't see it, Jesse. I really don't, because of the weather, because it doesn't seem like we're going to warm up as quickly as the model suggested early in the week and going into the end of the weekend, last weekend. There's just no question we're backing cattle up right now. The question I have now is, will we have a fourth week in a row of adding dressed weights to the cattle? And that's what I'll be working with and looking at in that weekly production number from USDA AMS, because we've had a 5-pound dress weight increase, 2-pound, and then 1-pound last week. Will we add another pound just because we are literally not taking on moving cattle out of feedlots into the packers in Texas because of this weather and because of the energy issue? I think this is where, if I have to take a step back a second, is what is going on in Texas because of this cold front and the energy pulse and the ripple effect that this has created in the commodity markets. I think people in the funds are going to have to really think twice about this just-in-time mindset. Between the pandemic and now this, I think funds maybe will want to carry commodities a little bit longer and a little bit heavier weighted as we go into 2021, especially if we get pullbacks. So I don't mean to mix apples and oranges, but the USDA is very optimistic about beef demand and pork demand and poultry demand. And that's where the feeding demand side for grains is a bright spot in 2021, based upon the chief economist's presentation this morning. So I think, again, like the wheat market, I think things get better and better for the cattle and hogs. I'm just a real nervous Nelly right now for the cattle in the short term and want to get some hedges in place because we are seeing the negative side of this energy market.
Well, we do have a cattle on feed report on Friday as well to look at. And on top of that, you know, we're just Packers. I mean, you know, some of those bids that came in the early part of the week, disappointing to say the least, you know, 110, 111, 112. And I mean, we're going to ask you prices up around 117, 118. So we're widening that gap again. And that's something I'm a little worried about as well there in feedlot country.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how else you look at it except that the demand at the retail level must not be there and that pork is coming in and chickens are coming in and filling that retail demand gap. And I think this is where I hate to say this because I hope it's not true, but I'm wondering what we're seeing right now, Jesse, isn't a combination of things. But the biggest thing is the spillover effect and the end result of the pandemic and all these restaurants not coming back, that essentially the consumption and demand pattern for beef has maybe changed and maybe changed, maybe not permanently, but for an extended period of time. And I hate to say that because I sure hope that's not the case. But I was amazed. I bought 3 pot roasts last weekend on purpose for my calving clients in Nebraska and in Iowa and in Kansas, my cattlemen that are going through, you know, really truly hell and back right now with the weather. I bought 3 pot roasts, and for the first time this winter, and for the past, I think, 6 months I've been buying online, I was able to get all 3. They didn't shortchange me. So that just told me at a good price and getting all 3, there's something going on with this beef demand right now, especially with certain cuts.
Yeah, very, very true. It'll be interesting to watch here as well. On the hog side, we finally, it looked like maybe saw this hog market take a breather, that April contract. Ben, it's such a premium to the cash index. Took a hit the last few days. We come in here today fairly quiet in this hog market. I think maybe a good sign for our independent hog producers and us folks who are really watching that hog market intently, but still, to me, I get the feeling that we've run out of steam in this hog market and we're kind of correcting. Is that what you're seeing, or was it?
Yeah, I do see that. Yes, I really do feel the need that we need to feed the bull. That's why when someone says something like what you just said is precisely as you did, I really get excited about that. And pardon the interruption, but yeah, the feeding of the bull, I think, is where we're at right now in the hogs. And you brought up the weekly export sales a minute ago. Nowhere is it more important than in the pork side of the equation on Friday, in my opinion, because of that Lunar New Year and because USDA's chief economist did talk about China's pork demand continuing to stay strong heading into 2021. And I think that right there gives you the validity. You maybe could buy the rumor and sell the fact now if you don't keep feeding the bull. So strong weekly export sales keep me at bay as a hedger, but the clock is ticking, in my opinion. And like the cattle, I want to get hedges in place before the end of this month.
And I think it'll be interesting to see all these numbers on Friday from the Ag Outlook Forum as we wrap it up. Just a lot to digest in this market. And so far, like we mentioned, most of these numbers as expected. But again, it's still going to have an effect on our markets no matter what, even if the market was anticipating it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, you think about it, too. We're just not going to get a lot of information that it's going to be market moving, if you will, from the USDA when it comes to new crop until we get to that end of March acreage report. So we'll go back to what's going on in South America and what is happening with La Nina and whether it's going to end or not, and whether we get safely, you know, we look like we have a hole to be able to get safely and planted on time here in the Northern Hemisphere.
Mike, any other final thoughts you have for us on this Thursday?
I think you've worn me out, Jesse, as usual. Great questions, as always.
Well, I know folks can reach out to you, globalcomresearch.com. That is globalcom with two M's, research.com. If you're listening and not watching us on YouTube, that's the website. You can find Mike and find his information. I know you got a great newsletter and plenty of stuff to help folks out, Mike.
Yeah, I hope you take up that trial because it's a really interesting time in the markets, and I think we could do you some good with some independent analysis.
Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. Appreciate the time as always. Good to talk with you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a great week, Jesse, and thank you.
Mike Zuzulo joining us here today. That is our Thursday edition of Market Talk for February 18th. Find us online, markettalkag.com. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Have a great afternoon.